Blog Talk Radio.
To another edition of the Story Blender, hosted, of course, by author Stephen James. And tonight's show, he is going to have on with him Hank Philip P. Ryan, I believe. He also has a special guest, Susan May Warren, is going to be on there co-hosting with him. We also want to let you know that the Story Blender and all the shows this month are brought to you by New American Library, the publisher of Somebody I Used to Know, the latest thriller from best-selling author David Bell. So, who Nelson DeMille praised as a natural storyteller and superb writer. We here at Suspense Magazine says he's one of the brightest and best crime writers of our time. So make sure you check out Somebody I Used to Know by David Bell. And now, without any further ado, we are going to hand it off now to Mr. James and the Story Blender with Hank Philip P. Ryan. Here you go.
Little delay, but it is coming up here.
Sorry about that. We had a little technical, but here we go. Hold on. Story Blender.
Welcome to the Story Blender. I'm Stephen James.
And I'm Susan May Warren.
And this is where great storytellers share the secrets of great storytelling. And Susan, I want to thank you for filling in and being our guest this week, guest co-host with us. And we're excited about having you here and also having a great guest.
Yeah, I'm so thrilled to be here. I love talking story with you, and we have a great guest on today, so I'm just thrilled to be here.
Well, Hank Philip P. Ryan is the on-air investigative reporter for Boston's NBC affiliate. She's won 33 Emmys, 13 Edward R. Murrow Awards, and dozens of other awards and honors for groundbreaking journalism. And not just a journalist, but she's also the best-selling author of 7 mystery novels. She's won multiple prestigious awards for her crime fiction, including 5 Agathas, the Anthony, the Daphne McCavity, and for the other woman, the coveted Mary Higgins Clark Award, which if you're involved in mystery writing or suspense, all of those or any one of those would be amazing, but to get all of them is pretty extraordinary. She's the only author in the history of the Agatha Awards named in honor of mystery author icon Agatha Christie to win 2 Agathas in the same year. Truth Be Told is a Library Journal Best Book of 2014, and national reviews have called her a master at crafting suspenseful mysteries and a superb and gifted storyteller. She's also a founding teacher of Mystery Writers of America University and the 2013 president of the National Sisters in Crime. Her next novel, What You See, is the 4th installment in her Jane Ryland series and will debut in October. And Hank, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. What a treat to be here. I love that introduction was lovely. Thank you. I'm very happy.
Well, I remember first running into you at a Thriller Fest in New York City a number of years ago, and you were leading, you were one of the panel moderators. And anyone who's been to different writers' conferences probably knows that panels can be pretty dry and boring sometimes. But I remember sitting there, and you did such a great job moderating this panel. I thought, she would be a great person to have, you know, to do an interview with someday, and that day is finally here. So thanks for being here.
Well, you know, wonderful. Yeah, that's so nice of you. Thank you. Yeah, it's really difficult to prepare to be a moderator. It isn't an easy job at all, and you have to really care about it. And it's interesting in light of what we're talking about today, storytelling, because one of the questions I ask myself when I prepare to be a moderator is the same thing I ask myself when I'm writing a story, which is, what do people care about? What do they want to hear? Why are they here? Why have they, you know, chosen a seat in this room, or why have they opened the cover of my book? What is it that they want? And I think about providing that. You know, ever since we were little, if we're lucky, someone has sort of put us on their lap and said, once upon a time. And then we know what will happen after that. You know, some new world will unfold, and you know, that's a concept, that's a construct that we cherish, that tell me a story. And we can talk about this because whether it's investigative reporting or whether it's crime fiction writing, that's all that matters. It's just telling a great story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember when I was a little kid, my uncle would always tell stories. And just like what you said, he would say, you know, once upon a time, and we would visit him maybe for Christmas, New Year's or something. He'd take the kids into a corner of the room, and he'd always get this look in his eye. And if you had someone tell you stories, you know that kind of a look. And suddenly we were no longer in the living room. We were, you know, in the middle of the Mediterranean or up facing a grizzly bear in Alaska or somewhere, just on these incredible adventures. And it was all just carried away on the wings of imagination
and
stories.
And, you know when you open a good book and the story begins to unfold, you kind of know it instantly. The walls fall away and the pages even fall away, and you're transported into the world of the story. And, you know, that's what I think is so important to remember, is that this is a world that we're creating, and the world has to be real and tangible and cinematic and believable, whether it's fantasy or, you know, or reality. It's got to take you to that place.
Yeah.
I love how you said cinematic, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's so true of stories today is, you know, in the past, maybe they didn't need to be so much, but readers today are very narratively astute, and they're very used to, you know, visual media. And so finding a way to write in a voice and with the passion and the clarity so that we can actually see the stories, I think is huge today.
That's interesting because one of the goals, I mean, you know, I'm a television reporter. I've been a television reporter for 40 years, and it's all about the video. You know, if you don't have good video, then you don't have a good story. So what I try to do in writing my crime fiction is to think about painting that picture in a way that allows the reader to use their imagination as much as I have. So, you know, two things about this. One is my goal is to have someone say to me, oh, I could just picture that. I could just envision that. When I haven't specified every single element of that picture, but just enough, you know, they talk about having, you know, when you drop a drop of iodine into a glass of clear water and it colors the whole thing. You know, that's what you need to do, I think, in creating your book world, is tell the reader enough, just give them that drop of iodine for their imagination, if that makes any sense, and
mm-hmm.
it blooms into the picture in their own mind. And so I think about, when I'm trying to tell a story, I think about, am I in the right place to tell it, or can I make this action or this advance the story in a place that's more interesting, more cinematically interesting than where I am. So can I, instead of having someone sitting at a desk looking at a computer, I mean, in one of my books, I had the main character, Jane, sitting at a desk looking at a computer, looking something up. And I thought, well, that's not very visual, you know. How can I make that, how can I tell the story in a more compelling way? So I had the database that she's working on crash, and she had to go to the actual place where the information was. So she had to get into a cab and the sweltering August day in Boston and jounce through the cobblestone back streets of the north end of Boston, you know, smelling the salt air and hearing the seagulls and the crazy radio of the cab driver, but she's determined to get there, and she goes to the marble and glass Coast Guard building on the harbor, and the airlock doors open, and the cool petty officer pats her down and makes her dump out her purse, and there's the Percocet that she hoarded from their dentist appointment, and, you know, there now is exactly the same thing happens. She's going to go look in a file, but now you know where she is, and that she's determined, and that she has a life, and that she has a feel, and there's a sound, and you know she's in Boston, and you smell the harbor, and you know, when you, it takes you somewhere, and that's what I mean by cinematic. That's a story you can see.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I know Robert Dagoni is a thriller writer, suspense writer, friend of mine, and he was on earlier, and you know, one of the things that he often talks about is get your character moving. So often you read, especially aspiring writers, and they'll do that. They'll just be sitting around eating, and then they'll go out for drinks, and then they'll sit at the computer.
did he talk about bog sat, that you don't want bog sat in your book?
No, what is that?
B-O-G-S-A-T, bunch of guys sitting around talking.
Oh, I love it.
I love that. That's great.
I do too. And it's so easy to just have somebody, you know, somebody told me once, never open a book with somebody sitting in the bathtub thinking about what happened. You know, like, no, you know, you don't want that.
No.
So, you know, a good story, whether it's an investigative story, as I said, or whether it's a crime fiction story, you know, it's all about that. What's the best accolade that the reporter could get? That someone says, "Ah, that was a heck of a story. That was a great story." I mean, that, and it's the same with crime fiction. You know, you want a great story with a compelling character, someone you care about, and a problem that needs to be solved. You want the good guys to win and the bad guys to get what's coming to them. And in the end, you want some justice, and
mm-hmm.
you want to change the world a little bit. You know. And so that's the same, you know, after having written crime fiction, I mean, after having written investigative stories for 30 years, I started writing crime fiction 10 years ago, and I had this amazing revelation that it's the same, you know, it's the same thing. I don't want you to click that clicker and change my, you know, and click off my investigative story on TV. And I don't want you to be able to put the book down. I mean, I imagine people reading my current book, Truth Be Told, on an airplane and being sad when they get to their destination. You know, because they just think, oh, one more chapter. I wish it was farther away. So
mm-hmm.
that's
nice.
The whole thing is this, you know, changing the world, keeping the story going, weaving that tale, so that somebody just wants to read, you know, can't wait to find out what happened.
That's really fascinating. I totally agree, because I think that's exactly what I love that you had, you know, a problem and justice and changing the world a little bit. But I think that, you know, you have this really great advantage because you get to do this investigative reporting as well. And so how many of your stories do you pull, like, from, you know, your actual, you know, the other life that you live as an investigative reporter? Have you been able to, I mean, does it generate great ideas for you to then bring on to the fictional page, or do you just, you know, how's the world merge there? And then have you ever gotten into trouble, you know, maybe pulling ideas from one world to the next?
Knock on wood, so far so good on the trouble element of it. No, I mean, I am the luckiest person in the world because, you know, people say to me, do you do a lot of research? And I say, I've been doing research for 40 years.
Right,
you know,
I just
didn't know it. So, you know, I've wired myself with hidden cameras. I've gone undercover and in disguise and confronted corrupt politicians and chased down criminals and been in, you know, tear gas and hostage situations and murders and in prisons. And, you know, I know what it looks like when somebody's lying. And, you know, so I've had those experiences. I bring this sort of verisimilitude and authenticity of my reporter character. I mean, I know what she's doing because
yeah.
I've done that. I mean, they talk about stories being ripped from the headlines, and I'm in the lucky, glorious position of being able to rip them from my own headlines.
Right.
So every one of my books has, and I can tell you that they're not my news stories made into fiction in at all. I mean, that's not what I do. But, you know, every author takes their own experiences and sort of twists and polishes and injects with adrenaline and adds excitement and takes those little puzzle pieces of reality and weaves them together in a new way. My book, Truth Be Told, you know, we did a story, gosh, 10 years ago about incredible problems in the home improvement and mortgage banking and foreclosure banking crisis fraud world. I won 3 Emmys for that and got people's homes out of foreclosure. as a result of the story, and got $1 million, maybe more, in refunds and restitution for consumers. But as a result, I know how those systems work. I know how banking works and mortgage financing works, and I know how home improvement contracting works, and I know what can happen in an empty house, and who's in charge of it, and what might happen. And I started thinking, what might be going on in those empty foreclosed homes? And that became Truth Be Told. The opening scene of Truth Be Told, which I won't give away, totally came from real life. Huh. Absolutely came from real life. But the real life scene of the eviction didn't end the way that it does in the book. So you get a jewel, you get a gem of a nugget of an experience, and the dominoes start to fall, and then your new story develops from that.
Yeah.
So I would say every single book I've ever written has those, and I'm lucky enough to have my husband is a criminal defense attorney, so talk about having in-house counsel. So
right.
And somebody who has great cases. My new book, What You See, begins with a murder that is based on a case that my husband had. Just that one little tiny scene.
And then it goes
into complete fiction from that. So I think every author uses that. I'm just lucky enough to have, a really terrific reservoir of long-term experience from which to draw those ideas. So yeah, ripped from my own headlines, absolutely. So
that brings a real genuineness to what you write. It isn't just you peeking at this world from the outside, but from the inside. I love that.
Yeah, I think that's very wise of you. I know what people look like when they lie, and I know I've had people confess to murder and convicted murderers tell me that they were innocent, and I've been in prison in the back rooms of the district attorney's office. So, even from the little things like how a court reporter looks, or, how the bailiff acts, or, what the courtroom seats are like. I mean, it's real. It's real. It isn't, again, though, that's one of the sort of things that's the magic of fiction, is that you take the reality and then see how it evolves into the reality of your novel, which is different, which is the glory of it, that you can allow it to be different. But it does, you're so right, that I'm delighted to hear that you think that my books have this sort of underlying basis in, that could happen. That's exactly what it felt like, or I've been there, or I've seen that, or that's just how somebody would talk. And also the pressures, the high stress and the high stakes of being an investigative reporter. Somebody's reputation is at stake every day in my life. I don't mean to oversell, but like somebody's life is in my hands every day.
Right,
because
right.
what I put on TV, it gets seen by a million people. So
right.
when I tell a story, it's got to be true, and I've got to care, and I've got to be compassionate. I've got to ask myself, is this worth it? Is it valuable? Am I harming someone? Is it fair? Is it honest? Is it objective? And if I get it wrong, I'm doomed. And if I don't do the next big story, I'm fired. And if I don't get done in time, I'm fired. So the pressure is enormous, emotionally and sort of physically and professionally. And I'm delighted to be able to sort of let people in on that in the books as well.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love it. I love that combination of being an investigative journalist, but plus also an award-winning novelist. So you talked about this a little bit earlier. What are some of the aspects of story or storytelling that you think carry over from one to the other? I think we talked about emotional resonance, with the stories that we're trying to tell and the genuineness, but are there other aspects that you think of, okay, when I'm telling an investigative story, here are the key things that I'm remembering. What about fiction?
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I think about this all the time, actually. There is only a certain amount of time for each newscast, And when we go to our story meetings in the morning and the powers that be are deciding what's going to be on the newscast that day, one of my producers always says, why do I care? You know, why do I care about that story? Mm-hmm. And I think about that every day in writing crime fiction. Why do I care about this person? Why do I care about this action? Why do I, as a writer, and then as a reader, why will the reader care about this? What is it doing? Why is it here? The next word and the next sentence and the next paragraph, why? You know, my friends, my colleagues at Channel 7 laugh at me because I'm, you know, they'll ask me, they'll say something and I say, why? I'm always saying, why? Because the more you ask why, the more you're getting deeper into what the story is. And that's the key, too. So why do I care? And why did the person do that? What, you know, and that's motivation, and that's goal. So the key of why is the big question, but behind the why is that everything, every event is the effect of a cause, if you know what I mean. So everything happens for a reason, and real people do things because of some motivation, something that happened before that makes them do the next thing. So sometimes people say to me, you know, do you ever get stuck in writing your crime fiction? Do you ever get stuck? Do you ever write yourself in a corner? I mean, we all do. But I don't look at it that way. You know, if I think, now what? I think, well, what would really happen?
Mm.
You know, what would somebody really do? What would somebody really think? What would, you know, it's in real life, you know, of course we have moments where I think, gee, I don't know what I'm going to do now. And then you make a decision based on something. So you're also, or else we'd all be just standing still in the middle of the street. You know, everybody's motivated by a goal or a need or a desire or a passion or, you know, a threat or whatever it is. You're acting because something matters. So what is it that matters to this character? And it's the same thing in, you know, whether it's crime fiction or whether it's investigative reporting, it's about why someone does what they do, what's behind that. And the other thing that, you know, the thing about investigative reporting and crime fiction writing is that the main character has to discover that about the other people in the books. Why did they do that? Why did that happen? And that's the investigation part. So you're sort of doing it on a couple of levels. As an author, you're laying out a story. You know, I have no idea where my stories are going to go, but you're laying out a story, and then part of the deal is that the main character is discovering the why of why people do something through their own perspective of, you know, just as we all talk to each other, why would somebody do that? Why would they do that? Or, you know, you read a news story where something happens and you talk to a pal and you say, did you read about the X, Y, and Z? Wonder why that happened. And you can sit and spin motivation, right? And that's fun. Mm-hmm. And that's what a good main character in crime fiction does, is try to figure out why something happened. And the key to a good crime fiction novel, I don't mean to be like pronouncing, is that the reason for whatever it was that happened has got to be believable and, you know, hit you in the stomach with like, oh my gosh, I should have seen that. Wow, that makes sense. That I've never read anything like that before. And that's what I'm going for. That at the end of the story, when the answers are revealed and the reasons are revealed, you think, oh, I should have seen that coming. Why didn't I figure that out? You know, don't you love that when that happens?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely.
Rather than having the response be, are you kidding me? You're like, that's ridiculous. When you think, wow, you got me. And I don't have an outline when I write, so everything is a surprise to me. Everything is a surprise. So when people say,
good to hear that. I'm not an outliner either.
Oh, and isn't, I mean, when people say, when people want an outline, I say, how can I write an outline? How can I tell you what happened when it hasn't happened yet? You know, it only happens, right? Do you feel that way too?
Well, it's funny because Susie and I go back and forth with this idea of outlining. I actually wrote, My book, Story Trumps Structure, is all about writing organically or intuitively.
Uh-huh.
And so I think I love what you said. I'm on the same page that for me, when I'm writing, I don't know where it's going to go, but I'm asking questions to kind of write myself into corners and then out of corners.
And
some of the stuff that you said is exactly the same questions that I ask myself. What would this character naturally do?
I love
do?
To hear that. I mean, that's one of the, you know, one of the things about, you know, being an author is that, you know, we're so alone when we're writing. And shows like this and discussions like this make me realize, you know, I write alone, but I'm not alone. You know, to have somebody say, oh, I get that. I feel that way too. It's really interesting, you know, when I figured out the end of Truth Be Told, I was in my study by myself, and it was really, I said to my husband, I don't know the end of this. I can't write this. Truth be told, I've set up this big problem, and now I can't solve it. And he said, well, you're almost to the end of the book. You know, you certainly know who the bad guy is. And I'm like, yeah, no, I don't really. and so when I figured it out, I was by myself in my study, and I stood up and I applauded. I'm like, yeah, I figured that out. And so people say to me, wow, Truth Be Told, you really surprised me. And I'm like, yeah, wasn't that a surprise? You know, talk about a surprise ending. I surprised myself. And that's the joy, isn't it? That's the magic. It's like, wow, where did that come from? You know, I was talking to somebody about this, and what you were talking about, Stephen, is that when you write without an outline, and I embrace Ken Follett, and I embrace Jeffrey Deaver, and those brilliant, brilliant authors who write with an outline, like, yay, I wish I could do that. And every time I write a book, I think the next time I'm going to make an outline because I'm not going through this again. And then I don't. Right? But think about being an author who types chapter one, you know, the word types the words, chapter one. And you have no idea what's going to be between that and typing the end. And yet you go on. And yet you go on because we have this astonishing belief as authors. We have this astonishing belief that we can take a journey that has an end. And if you have a contract like I do, my end has got to be December 1st, you know, it's not like, oh, whenever I get done, it'll be done. It's like, it's got to go to New York on December the 1st. So I sit here today, and I think, I have no idea what's going to happen in this book, but I believe I have the author's faith that it on December the 1st, I'm going to be happy with what I send to New York. Now, that's a leap. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there is an inherent trust in the writing process. You have to trust the process. And I know, Susie, you do more outlining, though.
I do. But I primarily romance, and so there's a lot of layers when you're writing, like, romantic suspense or, you know, something like that. So for me, I have to at least know what the journey is going to look like. And while I don't necessarily always know exactly what the end is, I need to know, you know, who my characters are, what they want, a little bit about their change, sort of what the black moment is that we're working towards. And I like to have a little bit more of that on the page. I don't think I could just start with a cold character and just be like, okay, here we go, because that would scare me. But I think that, I'm faithless, because I do believe in the writing process and discovering that. I like to discover it a little bit before I actually go to the computer and start writing. But I do think, I agree with you that there's this joy in discovering layers to your characters and scenarios that occur just in the process of writing. You're like, I mean, that happened to me yesterday. I was writing and something occurred, and I went, oh, my gosh, I totally didn't realize that. I didn't see that coming, and now what, right? So there is room for organic writing for outliners, and it just depends on how, I mean, some of these guys, you know, like Jeffrey Deaver, I think, I don't know, writes, you know, these massive outlines, you know, and I'm more like, you know, a stick figure kind of thing, but I still like to have that plotted out. So, but I'm curious, I don't write, Stephen and I were talking, I write more like the lighthearted romantic suspense where my people are just a little bit afraid and sort of falling in love, whereas Stephen's like, you know, he writes this dark stuff that you're like, you know, you can't read in the cold of night, right? So I'm thinking that there might be more to, so my question is that how do you plot all of the twists and turns and the red herrings and things like that that you put into your stories without, you know, like as you're just going and writing organically? How do you put all of those pieces in and make those twists and turns happen and then fit together, you know, at the end? So do you have a lot of rewriting, a lot of editing, or does it just sort of flow as you go through the story?
You can see me. I'm shaking my head because this is an unanswerable thing.
Oh.
it's an unanswerable question. It's, you know, things, people say things and episode things happen and people appear and things appear and choices get made. And I think, okay, I wonder what that's going to be. And it's like,
yeah.
And in the end, it's like a Rubik's Cube. You know, you start out with this Rubik's Cube where the colors are scattered, you know, confetti all through. And as you write, the little sides of the Rubik's Cube are going and you don't really know what you're doing exactly. You're just keeping going, trying to weave all the same colors into the same side.
Right.
And then at some point, you think, oh, that's why he said that. Oh, that's why she went there. You know, or, you know, if you type, the phone rang, and I think, wonder who that is. I'm not doing it on purpose. And only later, you know, three-quarters of the way through the book, I start seeing why the people did what they did. Now, in which order that happened in my head, I don't know, because I don't know. I mean, Lee Child once told me, you know, I said to him, how do you, kind of the same question to me that you were asking, how do you get all those pieces to fit together in the end? You know, they all work together so perfectly. And he said that he likens it to one of those cooking shows where at the beginning of the cooking show, they say, you have pot roast, pine nuts, beer, lemonade, olives, and pretzels. And in an hour, you got to come up with something. You got to make something out of that. So he says, and I do it just this way too. I realize at the beginning of the book, I'm just loading up my refrigerator with stuff. You know, so here's the person who acts like this, and here's the event, and here's the murder, and here's the knife that's got left behind, and here's a plastic bag, and here's something else. And then I have to make something out of that.
Mm.
You know, and I can tell you that when I get through, you know, when I'm almost done, there are very few major changes that I have to make when it comes to the plot.
Very few.
Because it's one of those things where, you know, when you type the first sentence, you know, a lot of doors close. There's a lot, you know, after that first sentence is written, there are places you can't really go, if you know what I mean.
Right.
But as you're, you know, as the boundaries of your book are delineated by what you write, that creates all the, you know, that sort of percolates all the possibilities of what you have to use, the equipment that you have to finish the book. Here are your ingredients for the book, and how can you make the best, most delicious, most fabulous, most unusual dish, most irresistible dish that you can, you know, out of those. And somehow, I mean, I remember arguing with my Shakespeare teacher in college, you know, and she asked me whether I thought Shakespeare had planned. I mean, I can't believe I actually had this conversation. It was like 50 years ago, seriously. this conversation about, I said, oh, no, Shakespeare must have planned everything. He must have figured out everything, because you can't have that many illusions and connections in a play without having planned that. And now all these years later, I realize I was wrong. You know, you write a story and things happen. For me, you know, in my experience at least, and that's why we're talking about this, in my experience, the way things get woven together will reveal itself, you know, just as you both are saying, if you believe that they will. I know that sounds, I'm hearing myself and I'm like, oh, that's ridiculous. But it does. The story begins to work for itself and begins to gel for itself. And the goals become clearer and the motivations become clearer and the resolutions become clearer. And again, I keep saying to myself all through the book, why would they do that? Why would they do, you know, as the book becomes, you know, as the denouement arrives, why did they do that? Why would that happen?
Right.
How would the relationship, how would the relationships work? You know, what if it were this way? What if it were this way? What if it were this way? And you try it all out. Somebody told me a million years ago, if you're stuck in your story, go through every character that you have and say, what if that guy was the bad guy? Then do the next person. What if that guy was the bad guy? And it's not like, they didn't mean really make them be the bad guy in your book, but it's a way of sort of crystallizing your thought process about what relationship does that person have with everybody and why would they care about what happened? And suddenly you see new ways of looking at the world you've created. And it's very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love that. And one of the things that you brought up, you know, a minute ago, you said limitations help to percolate possibilities. I thought that was brilliant. I love that.
I said that? Well, all right.
Yeah.
I think it does because, you know, it's like a pressure cooker for your book. And something has to happen. And those are the ingredients that you have to make that thing happen. I mean, we're lucky because as authors, we can always throw in another ingredient. You know, we can always go back and by the smallest of changes, you know, change somebody's personality or change how somebody looks or change how somebody behaves or take a person who was snarky and nasty and in a couple of tweaks and changes, you can make them be lovely. You know, that's so, you know, when you realize you can take someone or take a situation and delete something or add something and it's a totally different thing. You know, it's fabulous.
Okay,
and
so
I think, you know, oh, go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to follow up on, I love your analogy of having your full refrigerator. I just think that's fantastic. So now, like, my question is, what do you take out of the fridge first? Is it, do you pursue the character or the plot? So, like, you have the story idea, like, you know, I don't know how you start a story, but, and so that's the question. Like, I start usually with a story seed or an idea, and then I apply my character, and we go through the story that way. But do you start with a story, you know, like a story idea? Do you start with a character? Do you start with a plot, sort of like, oh, I love, you know, like, for example, you're talking about the house crisis and that, you know, did you start with that? So tell us just a little bit about what ingredients you assemble first before then you have, like, the meal starts to come together.
It's funny because I know this is not the cool way of thinking about writing novels of suspense, which is what I write. I know that you're supposed to think of character first, but I really don't. I'm a plot girl. I'm a big, big plot girl. And I really start with the domino that gets knocked over at the beginning of something that happens. Hmm. And then how my characters, I mean, my main character is Jane Ryland, an investigative reporter in Boston, and Jake Brogan, who is a Boston police detective. Jake, in my books, Jake always has a murder case that he's solving. He's a homicide detective. And Jane always has an investigative story that she's working on. And those two storylines get woven together, and in the end, sort of each one helps the other. There's something in each one that helps the other one come to the end of their story. Mm-hmm. So I know I need a cool murder for Jake to solve, and I know I need a cool story for Jane to solve. And I figure out the murder for Jake is often early in the book. In my new book, What You See, which comes out this October, it's a stabbing that takes place in broad daylight in a tourist place in Boston, in Quincy Market, at noon. And there are people all around, and everybody has a cell phone, and everybody takes pictures of it.
Hmm.
And the surveillance cameras are rolling, and, you know, so is that going to be easy to solve? Everybody saw it. Everybody
right.
took pictures of it.
Right.
But the book is called What You See, and, you know, obviously what you see is not what you get.
Right.
So the book is, I knew the book had to be about surveillance and hidden cameras and sort of the ubiquitousness of how everything we do is on video. And that so I have a theme, and that's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I have a timely theme. So for What You See, it's about privacy and about how when law enforcement officers look at video and they think they know what, and we know what we're seeing, it must be that. There is the picture, but that may not be true.
Right.
And then I, I started with that, and then I knew that I wanted to have a missing child, or maybe not missing, and have it be about custody battles and family choices. So I knew that that had to be something about, that something had to be on video, something had to be about surveillance, something had to be about photographs, and that's what I had.
Huh. Wow, so, that's great.
And if you think about that, I knew the title was going to be What You See, that everything had to be about that. Everything in the book, every element of the story had to be about what you see. And when you read the book, and I hope you do, when you read the book, you'll see that everything that advances the story is about what someone sees and how they see it and how that could be wrong. So that's the horrifically long answer to your question, Susan, which was I start with a cool plot thing. I start with the cool plot thing. And truth be told, the book that's out now, the Library Journal Best of 2014, won the Agatha this year for Best Mystery. Truth be told, came from the question of what could be going on in those empty houses, in those empty foreclosed homes that blight neighborhoods all across the country. What else could be going on in there? I mean, think about that. They're empty.
Yeah.
The utilities are all on because the banks have to keep the utilities on in order to, you know, make the houses be not fall apart and not be decrepit. Somebody has to mow the lawn. Somebody has to keep them fixed up so the neighbors don't get angry and the property values don't get down. So what could happen in there? And I started wondering about that. What could they be used for?
Yeah.
And that was the beginning, you know. And what would happen if somebody tried to take your home? And so, truth be told, is a mortgage banker turned Robin Hood who decides to manipulate people's mortgage records so it looks like they've paid their bills, and they don't, and their homes aren't foreclosed on, which is lovely, but it's illegal.
Right.
Right? It's robbing the bank.
Right.
So that's the, you know, one of the things I try to do in each of my books, too, is think about, why? What if someone does something that's good that's also illegal?
Yeah.
And that happens in every one of my books. How do we deal with that as, you know, as reporters and as law enforcement officers, as the public, how do we deal with that conflict of good versus illegal? And so that all goes in, you know, when you write, you know, if your book is 100,000 words long, you're holding that whole thing in your head the whole time, right?
Right.
And that's such an amazing thing to be able to do. So I hold the whole story in my head all the time, even though it's not there yet.
Wow. That's fantastic. What a great answer. I appreciate that. That's really
I hope
really
that makes
helpful.
Some sense.
I will be reading both those books. I can't wait.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I'm just, do you know the Stephen Sondheim musical, Sunday in the Park with George? Have you ever seen that? It's about the French impressionist, the pointillist painter George Seurat, and he is on stage with a blank sketch pad, and he draws on the sketch pad, he draws a hat, and then he looks at it, and he says, look, I made a hat, where there never was a hat. It's that moment when he realizes he has created something beautiful and tangible, but brand new, that never existed before, out of only his imagination, out of only his creativity. And that's how I think of what we do as writers. You know, I sit at my desk every day on my computer and I make hats. I'm creating a new world that never existed before. And, you know, we, as human beings, are the only creatures who can do that. We can make a new world out of nothing but our creativity and our imagination. And that's what we're doing as writers. When people read about Jake and Jane and they come up to me and they say, oh, I love your book, I love Jane, I think, that's so amazing, you know Jane. You know, I made her up.
That's
but
cool.
She's just as real to them now as a real person.
Yeah, that's great.
I love that, and we're in the business of making hats where there never was one before.
Yeah, I love it.
Well, this has been a great conversation. I really, man, it's been a treat. I appreciate your joining us, Hank. And we want readers to obviously go out and buy your books. What's the best place to either go to for info about your books, or would it be to pre-order the new one or to order Truth Be Told? Where should we send listeners?
I cleverly called my website HankPhilippiRyan.com. So if you go to my website, HankPhilippiRyan.com, and I really appreciate you allowing me to say this, pre-orders of what you see are available now from everywhere. I'm so enthusiastic about it. I'm so excited about it. Truth Be Told, you know, it's a series of standalones, books you can read in any order. They have the two same main characters, but you can read them in any order. So Truth Be Told is out now. What You See comes out in October. And everything and every bit of info possible is available on my website, HankPhilippiRyan.com. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter, easily discoverable. And I would love to have you come chat, love to have you come visit. This is just, your questions are marvelous. You know, this is such a wonderful opportunity to, you know, not be alone in the world of writing. You know, I love hearing about storytelling, and I love to hear new ideas about how to be better. We all want to be better. You know, we all want to be better, and I'd love to share my books with all of you. So HankPhilippiRyan.com, Philippi like the Philippines.
Excellent. Very nice. And it was a super conversation. And to find more info about my books, my latest releases, StephenJames.net.
And if you want to check out my releases, go to SusanMayWarren.com. I also have a website that teaches people how to write at LearnHowToWriteANovel.com.
And for info about our guests, other broadcasts, go to thestoryblender.com. And always remember,
the art of the story is all in the blend.
We'll see you next time.